Bizarre.
Thanks so much for your time this morning.
All the best.
That's Darren Chester there, Nationals MP. You're listening to Radio National Breakfast. It's coming up to news time now, 7 o'clock.
ABC News. Good morning, I'm Simon Lauder. Thousands of people remain isolated by major flooding on the New South Wales north coast. Adrian Reardon reports.
Parts of the mid-north coast have experienced 5 days straight of rain, but showers are forecast to ease today. There's still major flooding in the region, and emergency services warn renewed river rises are possible today as earlier heavy falls make its way downstream. The wet weather system is slowly travelling south and is impacting the Hunter, which is also experiencing flooding. The SES says 50,000 people have been isolated by floodwaters across the two regions, and a focus today will be resupplying communities using helicopters and boats.
Former Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull says the Nationals are holding a gun to the Liberal Party's head by demanding leader Susan Lee agree to four policies to keep the coalition together. Pablo Vinales has more from Parliament House.
The Liberal Party room met yesterday after leader Susan Lee agreed to discuss the National Party's four policy demands. It comes just days after the coalition's sensational split, with the Nationals leader David Littleproud and Susan Lee now agreeing to try and salvage the relationship. Former Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull has told the Insiders podcast.
This holding a gun to the Liberal Party's head, which is what the Nats are doing, is really, really unwise. It's stupid politically.
Liberals will continue their discussions over coming days.
More reports of risks to children attending affinity education centres have emerged in Canberra after former educators revealed a toxic culture at the company. Jade Toomey reports.
Affinity Education is in the spotlight after a disturbing video was made public last week of a worker at a Sydney centre repeatedly slapping a child across the face. A Canberra affinity centre also made headlines after a 17-month-old child suffered a spiral fracture to his arm. Now, former educators have revealed two more disturbing incidents, including a child who was dragged through a centre and locked in a dining room, and another where three children were left alone in a room. Affinity has said it conducted investigations and sacked the responsible educators and said the company had robust child safety protocols.
Overseas, and the US Attorney General says the suspected killer of two Israeli embassy workers will be prosecuted to the full extent of the law. Here's North America correspondent Carrington Clark.
Pam Bondi visited the scene of the two killings outside the Capitol Jewish Museum in central Washington, D.C. She said the threat level has been raised after the shootings of Yaron Lischtinsky and Sarah Milgram, a young couple who both worked at the Israeli embassy in the city. The detained suspect is 30-year-old Elias Rodriguez, who's from Chicago. The suspect chanted Free Palestine after the shootings. Carrington Clark, ABC News, Washington.
The Palestinian Red Crescent Society is warning its ambulances can't operate in Gaza due to severe fuel shortages. Here's Middle East correspondent Matthew Doran.
Speaking in Geneva, the president of the PRCS, Yunus Al-Khatib, said the aid blockade of Gaza was going further than simply fueling starvation. He says only a third of his organization's ambulance fleet can take to the roads because they don't have enough fuel for their journeys. And as Israel ratchets up its military offensive across Gaza, the need for emergency services is growing by the day. Fresh evacuation warnings have been issued for communities in northern Gaza, forcing the displacement of many thousands more Palestinians as Israel continues to target claimed Hamas fighters and facilities. Matthew Doran, ABC News, Jerusalem.
Russia has confirmed it's received the names of 1,000 Ukrainian prisoners of war in preparation for a major swap. Europe correspondent Elias Kluwer reports.
Ukrainian security officials say a 1,000-name list of its prisoners of war has been submitted to the Kremlin as part of the POW exchange with Russia. Both Moscow and Kyiv announced last week that the two countries had reached an agreement on a prisoner swap during peace negotiations held in Istanbul. It was the first time Russia and Ukraine had held direct talks in 3 years. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky says the exchange of detainees was the only tangible result of the meeting, and that returning all of its prisoners of war is one of the country's top priorities.
Police in California have confirmed at least two people have died and eight people have been injured after a small plane crashed in a residential area of San Diego. Police say 10 buildings were damaged when the private plane went down. This is ABC News. China's ambassador to Australia says he hopes to see Chinese-owned company Landbridge maintain its lease over the port of Darwin. Before last month's federal election, both major parties committed to reacquiring the 99-year lease over the port, which was sold at the hands of the Northern Territory government in 2015. Ambassador Zhao Chan told a conference of international delegates in Darwin that breaking the lease would damage Australia's international reputation.
Should there any measures to be taken, administrative measures or compulsory measure, I do not see this going to be helpful. That might constitute a disruption to the credibility of this country's commitment to a good environment.
A forensics specialist is expected to resume giving evidence in the Victorian Supreme Court trial of Erin Patterson today as the court hears about the electronic devices seized from the accused triple murderer's home. Jared Whittaker reports.
Ms. Patterson's trial yesterday saw Facebook group chat messages seized from Erin Patterson's phone. In the messages, Ms. Patterson complained that her parents-in-law had failed to intervene in a financial dispute with her estranged husband. In one message, she said she wants nothing to do with the family. Prosecutors allege Ms. Patterson deliberately killed her parents-in-law and another relative by deliberately serving them a beef Wellington containing poisonous death cap mushrooms. She's pleaded not guilty to murder and says the deaths were a tragic accident.
Human rights advocates have condemned the Queensland government's latest adult crime adult time law changes. The first tranche of the bill that sees juvenile offenders sentenced as adults for certain serious crimes such as murder was passed in December. State Parliament has now passed legislation to expand it to cover 20 more offences such as rape and attempted murder. Maggie Munn from the Human Rights Law Centre says it's disappointing.
We know that prison doesn't work in terms of reducing recidivism and reducing bad behaviour and things like that. So to funnel more kids into prison without offering any kind of support, any diversion, any appropriate legal mental health service support, housing support, all of that sort of stuff. It just compounds the problem.
One person has died and three others have been forced to flee a house fire in Melbourne's southeast overnight. Jason Katsaris has the details.
Emergency services were called to the blaze at a home on Lippards Road in Langwarrin just after 2 o'clock this morning. Three people were able to evacuate the home, but a fourth person was found dead inside a separate rear bungalow. They've yet to be formally identified. It comes less than 24 hours after another fatal fire nearby in Frankston. A person was discovered dead inside a Franklin Court unit after a fire took hold of the property at about 4 o'clock yesterday afternoon. Police say the unidentified person was located during an evacuation of the property. The cause of both fires is being investigated. Anyone who witnessed either incident or has footage is being urged to contact police.
A 95-year-old man has died in hospital after he was hit by a car in southwest Sydney. Police say the man suffered critical injuries when he was struck while walking on Elizabeth Drive at Liverpool about 10 o'clock last night. The 36-year-old driver was arrested and taken to hospital for mandatory testing. With sport now, here's Jared Coote.
Canterbury has lost just its second game of the NRL season, going down to the Dolphins, 44 points to 8. The Dolphins led by just 6 points at the break, but scored 30 unanswered points in the second half to win their fifth game of the season. Dolphins halfback Isaiah Katoa says his team changed their playing style in the second half.
Yeah, we spoke about it as a team, being able to play through them. We knew that with the slippery conditions, you know, guys were falling off a lot of tackles. So we knew that with our mindset, we just wanted to go through them. We tried to go around them in the first half and it wasn't working for us. And it was a good lesson for myself as a halfback just to understand how to control a team.
Geelong has kicked 3 late goals to beat the Western Bulldogs, 20 goals 7-127 to 16 goals 17-113 to open round 11 of the AFL. And Australian Mitch Marsh has scored a century for the Lucknow Supergiants in a 33-run win over Gujarat Titans in cricket's Indian Premier League. Marsh blasted 117 from just 64 deliveries as the Supergiants reached 2 for 235 from their 20 overs. In response, Gujarat could only manage 9 for 202 from its 20 overs.
In finance, the Australian share market is expected to continue its recovery after losing close to 1% early yesterday. It recovered to finish around 0.5% lower and is forecast to open around 0.2% higher today. US stocks have rebounded slightly. The Dow Jones and S&P 500 are both relatively flat. The NASDAQ has picked up almost 0.3%. Gold is just under 1% lower at $3,293 US an ounce. The Aussie dollar is buying a little over 64 US cents. You're up to date with the latest ABC News.
Across Australia, you're listening to Breakfast on ABC Radio National.
Good morning. Welcome to AM. I'm Nick Grimm, coming to you from Gadigal Land in Sydney. Three people have died in floodwaters in New South Wales and one person remains missing as the state experiences some of the most extreme rainfalls on record. Some areas have received more than a metre of rain in 3 days. On the state's north and mid-north coast, rivers are swollen, towns inundated and thousands of residents stranded. The worst of the rain, though, is now heading south, moving on to the Southern Hunter, Blue Mountains and Southern Highlands. The State Emergency Service says 40 emergency warnings are currently in place. Alison Chow reports.
For hours, dairy farmer Debbie Polson was trapped in her home at Oxley Island, 300 kilometres north of Sydney, watching the floodwaters rise.
When the waves are lapping at your window, that was very scary. Once it started to seep into my house, I then got evacuated by my son in a tinny.
The New South Wales floods have stretched hundreds of kilometres from the Hunter region around Newcastle up through the mid-north coast to Coffs Harbour. Debbie Polson says despite the warnings, the intensity of the floods caught her off guard.
We knew it was going to be major, but we didn't know it was going to be like a super major flood. You know, houses and other people that never, never get flooded. Flooded.
Joshua Hack is a farmer from Taree nearby on the mid-north coast. He says he's lost a lot of stock and wants to see urgent support from the government.
Farmers are just going to need a big, big hand. You know, here we are in the worst flood ever at a one in 500 when we've already had a 1 in 100, and we're just not seeing anything at the moment.
Prime Minister Anthony Albanese says he's making plans to arrange a visit, but the focus for now remains on rescuing people. The federal government has also activated a disaster recovery allowance for 4 impacted local government areas.
It's a joint payment made for emergency funding for food and for accommodation through the federal and state governments.
During this flood emergency, the State Emergency Service has conducted around 600 flood rescues and received calls for help from 2 men who later died in the floods. Andrew Gissing, the CEO of Natural Hazards Research Australia, says he's concerned about the strain and stress frequent disasters are putting on volunteer forces.
If we don't invest in disaster mitigation, our communities will only continue to experience further suffering, increasing the demands on government services, government expenditure. So that means investing in things like flood warning systems, construction and maintenance of flood levees. We need to be thinking about relocating communities as well.
Paula Jarzabkowski is a professor of strategic management from the University of Queensland. She says extreme events like these will only continue to occur with climate change, and people should err on the side of caution if they see emergency alerts.
We know that these bad events are happening more often, and that the severity is starting to scare us a little bit. You know, it's more intense than we thought. It's a bigger flood than we thought.
She says urgent work needs to be done to make the country more resilient to disasters, which includes changing where and how we build homes.
We have to accept that these things will be repeated, and the best thing we can do for people is we could raise their houses above the flood level if it's flooding. And in the most severe cases, do we need to consider how we help those people move, you know, buyback and relocation programs?
Professor Paula Jarzabkowski from the University of Queensland, ending that report from Alison Chow. And reporter Emma Rennie is in Coffs Harbour, one of the areas hardest hit by the floods.
It's been an incredibly wet and busy couple of days for emergency services here on the north coast of New South Wales. There's been something like more than 1,500 incidents in the 24 hours up to 5 a.m. today that SES volunteers were called to, and nearly 700 flood rescues in total across the disaster, with around 180 in that sort of 24-hour hour period up until this morning. So incredibly challenging and wet conditions here. The good news is the situation is easing a little bit today in terms of that heavy rainfall, but authorities are still warning us that we could be seeing renewed river rises and heavy rainfall may be continuing throughout today, sort of moving from the mid-north coast south now. So the areas of focus for that rainfall today are Newcastle, the central coast, and then moving down to Sydney, and then, of course, Illawarra and the south coast all could be hit by that rainfall. And so the SES is really warning about the risk of further flooding, and in particular, flash flooding in those areas as that rainfall hits. The other focus today is going to be on the resupply of communities that have been inundated and isolated by the floodwaters. So the SES have been bringing in helicopters and boats in order to get food and medical supplies to those communities that are currently cut off.
And amid all that activity, what sort of destruction, flood damage have you been seeing where you are?
So yesterday I was travelling down from Coffs Harbour to Kempsey with my colleague, and the amount of water, so that was along the Macleay River, which is an incredibly fast flowing river here on the mid-north coast. And the amount of water across the region is quite astounding, really. You would drive down the M1 and look out your windows in both directions and just paddocks and paddocks underwater, floodplains just completely inundated. Of course, a lot of that is rural land. And so a lot of what we're seeing in the region at the moment is just serious effects on agriculture. The loss of livestock and crops is devastating for farmers, but of course homes and businesses have been inundated as well, and that's incredibly heartbreaking for the people and communities affected.
Emma Rennie in Coffs Harbour there, and if you live in the affected areas, make sure you have the Hazards Near Me app, and for the latest information and advice, tune in to your local ABC radio. It's your emergency broadcaster. Former Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull has accused the Nationals of holding a gun to the Liberal Party's head. That's how he's characterised their demand that Liberal leader Susan Lee agree to four policies to keep the coalition together. The Liberal Party room met yesterday evening through a phone hookup after Nationals leader David Littleproud came back to the negotiating table just days after walking away. Some frustrated Liberals have told AM their former coalition partner is acting in bad faith. Here's political reporter Pablo Vignales.
Just days into a coalition breakup, a breakthrough. After Liberal leader Susan Lee agreed to hold a party room meeting yesterday evening to discuss the National Party's four policy demands, Deputy Liberal leader Ted O'Brien says it was productive.
I can report that it was certainly a positive discussion. It was an opportunity for Susan Lee to update colleagues on what I think has been a productive day. Discussions that she prompted with David Littleproud.
Though some Liberals had a different take, telling AM there's a sense of irritation and resentment at how the Nationals were making policy demands, such as supporting supermarket divestiture laws and nuclear power. They accused the smaller party of acting in bad faith, though Ted O'Brien wouldn't be drawn on those views.
I won't be speaking about how people felt in the meeting. That's for individuals. But I believe that the feedback from colleagues was very positive.
While some Liberals AM spoke to may be irritated, they also acknowledged the need to be, quote, adults in the room, and that the coalition is stronger together. Former Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull has an assessment of his own. He told the Insiders podcast,
I think this holding a gun to the Liberal Party's head, which is what the Nats are doing, is really, really unwise. It's stupid politically, because if Susan Lee agrees to it, then people will say, there you go again, the Liberals are doing, you know, the tail's wagging the dog, the Liberals are doing the Nationals' bidding.
Nationals leader David Littleproud maintains the demands are on policy principle. On nuclear power, it's expected the parties will settle on a pledge of lifting the ban. David Littleproud says the Liberals have made concessions.
They've taken our ask seriously and are now going to have that conversation within their party room around those four policies to see where the party room can get to. And I think that's a positive step, and because that, ultimately, from the very start, was the reason why we couldn't sign up to the coalition agreement at the time.
What do you say to some who might see this as you holding the Liberal leader ransom?
No, I'm not doing that. I think this shows that Susan and I have a great relationship.
Susan Lee agreed to resume talks yesterday after Mr. Littleproud publicly stated his commitment to shadow cabinet solidarity. Ms. Lee says that was a sticking point, but the National leader denies that.
The reality is we've made it very clear from the moment that I took to the party room, there were other issues that Susan and I, peripheral to those four, as part of every coalition negotiation, work through.
National's leader David Littleproud ending that report by Pablo Vinales. And coming up after 7:30 on Radio National Breakfast, Sally Sarah speaks to Liberal MP Dan Tehan. You're listening to AM, where it's now 20 minutes past seven. 4 days after Israel partially lifted its humanitarian blockade of Gaza, there are some positive signs in the war-ravaged strip, with a bakery reopening in central Gaza. While humanitarian agencies are welcoming the trucks being allowed into the territory, they continue to insist it's just not enough to tackle the hunger crisis there. Middle East correspondent Matthew Doran is in Jerusalem. Matt, what's happening with the aid heading into Gaza?
Well, Nick, good morning. More trucks have been lining up at the Kerem Shalom crossing in southern Israel today, waiting to head into Gaza and deliver vital supplies. We haven't got the figures on just how many trucks managed to cross today, but just shy of 200 have made it over the border in the first 3 days of this partial lifting of the blockade. There is a problem, though, in terms of how that aid is getting in. Quite aside from the concerns around the number of trucks going in, aid agencies saying hundreds are needed to enter every single day to make some sort of difference here. It's the process that is causing severe delays in getting the supplies where they're needed the most. So when trucks cross at Kerem Shalom, they unload that precious cargo on the Gaza side of the fence line, and then they return to Israel. It's up to humanitarian organisations operating inside the strip to then go and pick up those supplies and take them further into Gaza. And that's a perilous journey, not just because of the fighting which is happening there, but also because of the threat of looting. We do need to point out some supplies have made it further than the border. Around 90 trucks have been able to travel onwards, including some delivering flour to a bakery in Deir al-Balah in central Gaza. That's meant that bread can start going out there again, which is obviously very welcome, but the broader situation is still very, very grim. The Palestinian Red Crescent, for example, saying fuel shortages mean two-thirds of its ambulance fleet is out of action. And while Israel is saying it's acting appropriately here, it's staving off starvation, and that it's allowed months and months of aid into the strip during that ceasefire back in January and February. That's a position that many humanitarian organisations continue to argue is simply spin.
Meanwhile, in the last few hours, Benjamin Netanyahu has taken a swipe at the leaders of the UK, France and Canada. What's he had to say?
Well, it's his strongest criticism yet of Keir Starmer, the British Prime Minister, the French President Emmanuel Macron and the Canadian leader Mark Carney. The trio released a statement earlier this week condemning Israel's actions with regards to aid and also calling for a halt to its expanded military campaign in Gaza, threatening sanctions if it didn't deviate from course. Mr. Netanyahu has made some comments in the last few hours about the shooting of two Israelis in Washington, D.C., but he's tacked on broader criticism to those and said the comments which have come from the three leaders in the last couple of days are nothing but a reward for Hamas.
I say to President Macron, Prime Minister Carney, and Prime Minister Starmer, when mass murderers, rapists, baby killers and kidnappers thank you, you're on the wrong side of justice. You're on the wrong side of humanity. And you're on the wrong side of history. Now, these leaders may think that they're advancing peace. They're not. They're emboldening Hamas to continue fighting forever.
That's Benjamin Netanyahu speaking a short time ago. On matters more broadly of diplomacy, Mr. Netanyahu has apologised for an incident in the West Bank city of Jenin yesterday where Israeli forces fired towards a delegation of diplomats, including from those three countries he was taking a swipe at. He says that sometimes in war, accidents happen, but he insists his forces are targeting terrorists and not diplomats, Nick.
Matthew Doran in Jerusalem there. Meanwhile, the killing of two young Israeli embassy staffers in Washington, D.C. has shaken that U.S. city. The couple, Lynn Milgram and Yaron Lyshensky, were leaving an event at the Capitol Jewish Museum in the city's downtown when they were gunned down. The suspect has been taken into custody and has now been charged. North America correspondent Carrington Clark is in Washington. Carrington, take us through developments in this case.
Well, the most recent development is that the suspect, 30-year-old Elias Rodriguez, who hails from Chicago, has now been charged with multiple offences, including first-degree murder, but also murder of foreign officials. So he was taken into custody after these killings occurred, which were outside the Capitol Jewish Museum here in Washington, D.C. At the time, or just after the killings, he has been videoed screaming, "Free Palestine." And we know that the FBI is investigating this as a potential act of terror. The suspect, as I said, is in custody, but there is an investigation ongoing in Chicago where they're looking at his most recent residence. And obviously the investigation in part is to determine whether or not he did act alone. We heard earlier from the White House press secretary, Caroline Leavitt, who said that the president is being kept well informed of the investigation and is deeply concerned about the act.
The evil of anti-Semitism must be eradicated from our society. I spoke to the Attorney General this morning. The Department of Justice will be prosecuting the perpetrator responsible for this to the fullest extent of the law.
And Carrington, what sort of changes to security arrangements in Washington are likely as a result of this attack?
Yeah, so the Attorney General, Pam Bondi, has said the threat level has been increased. We've already heard from the New York mayor, who says that they are going to be increasing security around Israeli assets in New York. But, you know, Washington, D.C. is a city full of diplomats, and they usually are able to walk around pretty freely. There is obviously large security apparatuses in place in this city, huge amounts of security cameras, but people are relatively free. This has definitely sent a shudder up the spines of many diplomats. That the targeted nature of these killings is highly concerning. This is a city, unfortunately, that is beset with gun crime. Homicide is a near daily occurrence in Washington, D.C. But seeing what appears to be politically motivated violence is obviously deeply concerning and deeply upsetting. And I'm sure we're going to see further changes to the way security operates in this town.
Carrington Clark in Washington. Accessing mental health services when you're in need of help can be a big challenge for anyone. But for Australians from culturally and linguistically diverse backgrounds, the experience can be even more difficult. Luke Radford reports.
Getting help for mental health issues can be a scary and difficult experience. But imagine trying to do that when the person who you're speaking to may not understand what you've been through.
You're fighting this big elephant in the room that apparently no one can see, but only you're seeing. And you're kind of just trying to swim against the wave, but you're also expected to be the model minority.
Solicitor and youth advocate Naonica has personal experience dealing with Australia's mental health system. She says young people from multicultural backgrounds face great challenges getting help.
They're often isolated. They're often exposed to a lot of systemic violence as well when reaching out for support. So it becomes really difficult for them to feel like they have the right tools and the right information to do anything to change the circumstances.
A team of researchers from the University of New South Wales have been studying how young Australians from diverse backgrounds interact with the mental health system. Associate Professor Abner Poon is the lead researcher.
There are lots of different cultural concept of mental health. Mental workers need to understand the unique belief, understanding of different cultural group regarding mental health.
While those findings may seem obvious, experts are excited there's now actually good evidence for it. Rana Ebrahimi is the National Director of the Multicultural Youth Advocacy Network. She says it's a big issue, particularly for international students.
And especially for them, it's very different and even harder because they do not have the usual system and Medicare system that the young people from, for example, migrant or refugee background have.
One issue that came up in the research was that young people from multicultural communities are often reluctant to include their parents. It's something that Professor Patrick McGorry, the Executive Director of Origin Youth Health, is very familiar with.
At a headspace in Sydney a few years ago, some cases were presented to us of young Muslim women whose parents basically actively prevented them from getting help. It took a great deal of skill to engage the parents and to help those young women sort of free themselves up from that barrier and actually get help.
So what can actually be done? Professor McGorry says the obvious step is hiring more professionals from diverse backgrounds, but they're also looking at another technique pioneered in Zimbabwe.
They trained lay people, in that case grandmothers, to sit in the town square and be the first port of call to build trust with engagement with services. And we can do that in Australia as an initial step.
The re-elected Labor government has pledged to spend $500 million on 20 youth specialist care centres.
Luke Radford reporting. Briefly in finance, Wall Street stocks have closed a choppy session relatively flat after bouncing back from concerns that Donald Trump's proposed tax cut would add trillions of dollars to US debt. And that's AM for this morning. I'm Nick Grimm. It's 7:30 and good morning, Sally Sara.
Thank you, Nick, and good morning. This is Radio National Breakfast. Coming up, Liberal MP Dan Tehan is my guest as the National and Liberal parties look for a way forward. And later this half hour, you'll get the latest update on the flood situation across the New South Wales mid-north and central coast regions. The state's Emergency Services Minister, Jihad Dib, will be my guest. The weather for the major centres today, Broome, partly cloudy in Broome and 31 degrees. For Perth, showers easing and a top of 18. For Adelaide, sunny today in Adelaide, 18 degrees. Melbourne, showers increasing 16. Hobart, possible late shower 19. Albury-Wodonga, rain and 18. Canberra, rain today and 17. Wollongong, rain, possible storm and 20. Sydney today, still wet, rain, possible storm and 21 degrees. For Newcastle, rain and 22. Lovely in Brisbane today, sunny and 25 degrees. Townsville, partly cloudy and 28. Cairns, partly cloudy, 29. If you're in Darwin, you'll have a mostly sunny day today and 32 degrees. And in Alice Springs, a sunny day in the Alice and 24 degrees. Luke Sidham-Dundon is back to update you on what's happening in the news. Luke.
Morning, Sally. To the flooding situation in New South Wales, and there are fears this morning for a 49-year-old man missing in floodwaters in Nimboida, about 40 kilometres south of Grafton. Three people have already died in the New South Wales floods. This morning, authorities are once again warning residents not to drive into floodwaters.
We've had 177 additional flood rescues. Most of these are for people